况呀。
我这样的说不会啊，我只要开始。
嗨，好呢。
嗨。
嗯。
Do you have any questions? Because I don't have any tonight.
Yeah, I do have one. I mean, I have a million questions, but I'm just going to ask one tonight. I'm going to go on mute in the meantime and then until we start.
Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Does anybody have any questions?
Amy said she did.
I have a question. Hello. I have a lot of questions, but I'm going to ask one tonight. The final letter, the Hebrew final letter. From what I've learned, when you put mem nun sadik, the pei and the kuf in that order, can you tell us a little bit about the meditation and those letters in that combination? Mansapach
is just the name of the five final letters. Mansapach has no meaning other than it's a word composed of the five final letters. There's no meditation per se. The final letters represent the end time. That's why they put it at the end of a word. So the metaphor, Mansapach, is a metaphor for the final letters, for the final time, for the end times, for the coming of Mashiach, for the completion of the tikkun process. That's what Mansapach has the meaning of.
Thank you, Chanoch.
Does anybody have any other questions?
Can I add a comment to that?
Of course.
Okay. Well, this is the last two Hoshana Rabbah services. From what we learned from your handout, at that time, about those final letters, we use those letters as part of our Hakafot. One year we did it at the synagogue, but last year I felt a little uneasy about it because I felt like being a Reform synagogue and not actually teaching a class that year, that it was best we did the ceremony here. And Brandy and Judy and Donna Malka, we used your handout to help us know what to do. So she might want to, you know, look that up. I suppose it was probably for some of the boss service.
We do discuss it in our preparations for the holiday of Rosh Hashanah, that it's utilized to, when we take the Arava to break the judgments, because the Arava, the willow branches, represent the idea of judgments. They're connected to Givurah. And so we beat five of them on the ground with the meditation at that moment, at that time. We beat the five willows five times, meditating on the five final letters one at a time. And it's essentially breaking the judgments that come in the idea of what is Hoshanah Rabbah. But that's also a very, you know, the ritual is more than just the beating of the five willows. It's, you know, it means reading the book of Deuteronomy after midnight. It's the day of checking the shadows. It's very, you know, there's a lot of parts to the ritual, and we go over that in our preparations for Hoshanah Rabbah.
I remember when we did that not too long ago. You know, we went over that. But I don't know, for just some reason it came to me today to ask about those letters.
The one thing that I've always wondered, and I just never had the time to look at it, when you put together the 72 names, some of those letters are final letters. But when they're presented in the 72 name chart, they don't utilize the final letters.
Chinuch, I do have a question on that one. When we do the 72 names, and there is... No, I've noticed the final kaf, but I don't remember noticing a final pay or fay. And I was going to ask, because on the chart there's no vowels. Well, even so, that was going to be one of my questions. On the chart, the 72 names, being that there's no vowels, how do we know when the letters pronounce a bet or a vet or a pay or a fay?
When you learn to speak Hebrew, the letter, the essence of the letter tells you what it is within the frame of the word. And Elchanan may have some additional grammar rules that apply to that. But essentially, the dagesh, which is the dot in the middle, which changes the letters from one to the other, because they're double sounding, they have two sounds. It's related to it relates to which months those letters create. But as a general rule, the final letter only has one sound. And that's just my own perception. It's not something I've ever heard from anybody. But I've never heard any of the double sounds that are final letters being pronounced differently. And I've never seen a word with a dagesh in the final letter. Hannah, do you have any other comments about that, Grammatica?
Well, I don't know if I do, but what came to mind was the chash that she said, the final chash, in the word melech, which is king, if it has a shava, which is two dots, one on top of the other, it's mainly a terminator. It doesn't really make a sound. It's the ending sound. So, huh.
Yeah.
But if one dot in that cough, then it's to be pronounced as a K sound. And I think it was only taught in one of the texts that I taught. And I thought it was interesting because the word that it appeared in was the word for walnut. And the walnut is called the king of trees. And I felt like the Masoretes, who are the group of people who came up with the dots and the dashes, we call them vowels, but they're not really vowels. They're no real, they're, you know, as you've taught before, there's no vowels in Hebrew. They're vowel sounds. But a group called the Masoretes came up with this system of dots and dashes, which we call Nikud, the plural is Nikudot. One source says around 400. Another says a different year, but between 200 and 600. But anyway, to help non-Hebrew speakers pronounce the Hebrew words correctly. So if the walnut is called the king of trees, I think the Masoretes, this was my feeling about it, my perception, was that because the word melech, we think of Hashem as being king, sovereign of the universe. And so they put a different nikud instead of a shava in the word melech. They put a single dot to make sure that one wouldn't mistake a food as being related to Hashem. And that might sound foolish to Jewish people, but there are religions who take bread and wine and think it turns into the man from Nazareth's body and blood. So it's not so foolish to, you know, to other religions. And I don't know if that answers your question. I don't remember seeing in the word ot the other day for woman, there was a dages in the final tav, and I asked the question why, and the teacher didn't know. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, maybe just like there's a dagesh occasionally in Yah, you know, a name for God, and it's to that you're supposed to actually give breath to that letter. So maybe, but that's not, those aren't final letters, so that doesn't really relate. But that's
right.
The only thing I know of dages is being in final letters would be the word melech when it's, I've forgotten what the word for walnut, or God's melech, I think, something similar to that. But the text had one dot in the kaf, and the notation was that it was supposed to be pronounced as a K sound, that it wasn't guttural. And I felt like that was maybe a reason that the Masoretes did that.
Well, the Masoretic text, which you're talking as a group of people, which are probably the monks in a certain monastery that did this, so that they could understand the pronunciation as opposed to the way the Greeks the Greeks do it, and you know, because of the first translation from Hebrew went to Greek, which was the Ptolemy.
Feeling.
And then, but the Masoretic text is the text that we utilize to know how to pronounce the words of the Tanakh. So I've given many examples, many classes about the word Bereshit, which can also be pronounced Bereshit. And without it, why don't we say, you know, why don't we call it Ba? Because essentially you know the bet at the beginning of the word is generally pronounced as the B sound, that it does have the Dagesh. So that's the way it's pronounced. And so generally as you learn Hebrew and you learn to read the Hebrew, you know what the sound will be. And a lot of times the word just doesn't feel right when you use the wrong pronunciation of the two sounding letters,
mm-hmm.
of the double letters.
We had an example in our class last week with Babayit, which is in the house, the Ba, and then Bayit, you know, put together as one word. But if you just said in a house, then you wouldn't have the Ba, you would just have the, but then the next bet did not take a dagesh, and so it was pronounced as a vet. It would then be the Bayit. Because whenever we make a word definite by putting the word ha in front of it, which is the, anytime we make a noun definite, or, well, any word definite, then that next letter is going to take a dagesh if it can take a dagesh. If it's any letter other than the ones we call the begat, the throaty five letters. So we're getting kind of complicated and away from what she was
Can I just ask a question real quick? Can you go back and just say, tell me the letters that you said that you put at the beginning of the word to make it? Can you just repeat that again?
Well, that's,
I think you said ha.
Kefet. We call it Begat Kefet. That's an acronym to help us remember those letters that take a dagesh at the beginning of a word or at the beginning of a syllable. And so if you say Begad Kefet, you've got B is the bet. Begad.
But let me interrupt and just bring it up. The acronym that Hannah's relating to, there are seven letters that take two sounds. And those letters represent the vertical lines in the tree of life. There are seven of those lines. But the double sound, the reason for it is one represents harsh judgment and the other represents soft judgment. That's why they have two sounds. And you'll find them to be generally guttural, which would indicate, again, from the sounds, it's indicating judgment. But the seven letters, I'll let Hana go into the acronym and what those letters are. But Begad is Bet, Gimel, Dalet. And what's the second part of the acronym?
Kefet would be the Kaf. It looks like a backward C with a dot in it. When it,
right.
Yeah, we would take the dagesh out. And then a say, and then a tav.
That's only six letters. There's one more.
Then.
Well, that's all that I know, but I seem like I remember from your Olivet class that you did give us one extra.
Yeah, it's that's why I don't use the acronym. The Bet, the Gimel, and the Dalet are two sounds. And the Kaf, the Pei, oh, the Resh and the Taf are the other four.
Okay, well, in all our text, I've taught three different ones, and the Aleph, the Ayin, the Resh, the Hay, and the Chet are called the 35, and they aren't in, they never take a Dagesh. Now, that could very well be American Hebrew. You know.
No, that's because they only have one sound.
Okay, well, they're called the 35.
Right,
and
but they're not guttural. The Aleph is up. They may be called the 35, but that's something that has, you know, it wherever it came from, it's not Hebrew. It didn't come out of Israel. The throaty letters, you know, I have to look it up because I never remember it, but if you look on your Tikkun HaNefesh chart, in the mouth, the 10th box, underneath the names of God, you'll see five sets of letters. And included in those five are all 22 letters. And basically, the sets of letters that you're looking at relate the different parts of the mouth that the sounds of those letters come from. But seven of those letters relate to, they have two sounds. The bet has bet and bet. The gimel has K, has G and J. The dalet, the D sound, but the other sound is a TH sound, like an echad. It's not really a dalet at the end of echad. It's a TH. The kaf, it's a soft ka. It's the K sound, which ends, it's an ending sound, and the other sound is a guttural, where it's the ha sound. The mem sofit, oh no, that's, mem is not a double sound. I'm confusing the mansapach, the final letters, with the double letters. So continuing with the double letters after the kaf, we have the pe, which can be pronounced pe or fe, with the p or the f sound, and the resh is the r sound, but it's also the rolling r, as in the Spanish rar. And then the taf is a T or an S sound, and the Ashkenazis always pronounced it as without the Dagesh, they pronounced it as an S, and with the Dagesh, they pronounced it as the T. But in the Sephardim, they always pronounced it as a T, because they don't think that the actual set double sound is the S sound, which makes sense to me, personal opinion, because there's three S sounds. There's the shin, the stomach, and the top is an S sound. Why do we need three S sounds? Doesn't make any sense to me. And that's why in modern Hebrew you don't have Shabbos, you have Shabbat. Because the rabbis agreed, the Sephardic and the Ashkenazi head rabbis in Israel in the early 50s, they agreed that the Sephardic pronunciation would be what they would use. And it's only the European Ashkenazi sects that continue to use Shabbos, which is what's prevalent in America. So going back to your original question of the Mansapa, the final letters represent the final days, the end days. And we have a tradition that says all of the letters will change wherever they are in the word. They will become final letters. And if you look at the final letters, and compare them to their original letters, they all go below the line except for the mem. And so that's an indication when the negative system is no longer active and a problem in the sense of drawing people away, we can give feed energy to the below the line through the Mansapach letter. But in our current situation, that we need to make sure that they don't. But all of the letters that are final letters will transform themselves into final letters once the Mashiach comes. All of the Torah scrolls will automatically change themselves. That's the tradition that is taught. And then we got sidetracked into the double letter sounds, which is basically a harsh judgment and a soft judgment, just like the day of Rosh Hashanah is one long day, representing the first day being a harsh judgment, and the second day is softer judgment.
Will it be only the final letters that will change, or will it be all of the letters?
No, only the final letters will change. All of the letters that are final letters. So a mem will, all of the mems will become closed. All of the nuns will go below the line. All the kafs will go below the line. The tzadi will all go below the line. And the pei will all go below the line.
I wonder what will happen to the script letters.
There will be no need for the script letters.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason you have script letters is some people think that it's a quicker way to write the letters. There seems that they think it's less movements of the pen. I don't agree with that, but I'm not an expert in Hebrew, so... But the only reason you would write the letters in that way is because people are used to writing it. They've learned to write it because they think it's a faster way to write it. But after Mashiach, why would you have a need for speed in what you're writing? Your whole approach will be totally different. We will not have the same sense of urgency associated with time that we would have in today.
Do you think, you know, we have a dot that we call the holam as a vowel sound, and then we also have
the holam is the one above the vav.
Vav, okay. In our classes, we gave it the term holam vav to distinguish the two, a holam and then a holam vav. Do you think that they'll all become holam vavs?
Yes.
When the term takes place.
That is the tradition.
Okay.
Because
so can you assume that? That holam vav is really there on the white parchment. It's just concealed right now.
No, that's not what it's saying. Let's use the word shalom.
Okay.
Okay.
Shin Lamed Holam Vav Final Mem.
Right. That is indicating that the word is complete because the Vav is there. But in other anytime the Holam is there, but the Vav is missing, it's an indication that the word is not complete. That's the energy change that takes place. But you also have the transitive Vav at the beginning of words. And if anybody ever counts the transitive Vavs versus the missing Vavs on words that are incomplete, they'll find that there's a direct connection. The numbers are going to be the same. No, I have not done it. I don't know anybody who has done it. But just logically, because the letters will transform themselves. The purpose of the transitive Vav changes the tense of the verb. Okay. But there's no need after Mashiach to change the tense of the verb. Because everything after Mashiach, everything is in the now. That's the energy of Mashiach. To be in the present and not be concerned about the future or the past. Everything is in the now. So there's no need for the transitive verb changes.
So that'll mean the names of some of the Torah portions are going to change. Because I used the example of several of the names of the Torah portion to teach the transitive Vav. I'm trying to think. It's some of the beginning.
They may not even be a need for the Torah portion name anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember that the Mashiach period is also a process. So initially, there would be no change other than what the sages say. There's no change when Mashiach comes, except that Israel will no longer be subjugated to the nations. But then, as time goes on, many things will change as the process goes through.
Oh, the letters are fascinating.
They are. That's why we have classes in them. And
I have one more kind of quick question. Depending how a family pronounces, say, Shabbos or Shabbat, will that kind of tell you the family history, whether they're Ashkenazi or Sephardic? Pretty much?
You can tell it, yeah, from
yes.
That, yes. But
okay.
That doesn't really... You don't really need to know family history in that context because the family name tells you the location.
Okay.
You will never find a Friedman or a Miller out in the Sephardic world. You'll find those names in Ashkenazi world. But there are family names that are clearly Sephardic. So there's no need to know it by the way someone pronounces the words.
See, it happens in our synagogue that the older members who were from the northern states and were Ashkenazi, they were in the habit of saying Good Shabbos. Well, now most everybody says Good Shabbos because they've heard it so much. So you can't really say it's by name, but sometimes just by custom.
Exactly.
What the
rabbis said was the Hebrew was to be pronounced with the T sound in the top. But if you were used to using the S sound for those words, that it was that was acceptable to use them. That's what essentially what the rabbi said. And the Ashkenazi Orthodox communities just continued to use the sounds as they had learned them.
I was asking, yes, because my family, that's how I always grew up, it was Shabbos with the S sound and how I grew up.
That's essentially who came over to America was primarily Ashkenazi Jews, and they pronounced it that way. And so America's, you know, when the synagogues were starting to develop Hebrew schools, as opposed to the yeshivas that the Orthodox community used, in America, you sent your kid to a synagogue and he started to learn and be taught the letters and all of that. They followed the majority of the people who they were able to hire were Americans. They didn't have the background. It's only in the last, it's probably 60 years that you had an influx of the Sephardic community. Maybe 70 years that you had this influx of the Sephardic community and people are, you know, learning about the sounds of the letters. We don't really know what is the proper sound on some of the letters because we've lost it. You know, the Ashkenazi and the Sephardi always pronounced the gimel as a G until the Yemenites came to Israel. And they pronounced it with a dagesh, they pronounced it as a J. So the Yemenites say hajafin, and everybody else says hagafin. So when Mashiach comes, when Eliyahu returns, we'll know what the proper sounds are. And in the meantime, not to worry about it.
Thank you, guys.
You all have
remember
a good evening.
Okay.
No. If there's you have additional questions or you want to continue the conversation,
I was going to ask Hannah Esther if she also remembered her family reciting the Mourner's Kaddish. And saying Yiskadal, the Yiskadash.
Yes,
you know, making
absolutely, yes.
You see, that's a pretty good hint that they were Ashkenazi. And then don't they also pronounce Adonai as Adonai, something to that effect?
The funny thing is, it depends if they're from Boston or they're from, you know, down south. But it's I've noticed, like, the New York family pronounces it different than the South Jersey family in some of the letters like that, words.
The Jews that settled in the South, there was a greater amount of Sephardic Jews settling in the South. But, you can't even go by that, just what you've noticed. It's anecdotal. To answer Hannah's statement or question about Adonai, this is the Orthodox communities do not want to say the name of God unless it's prayer. So they will change the word. Though there are one tradition is to call it Adonam, another is Adonai. So they don't want to say Adonai until they, you know, when, unless it's prayer. So they change the word slightly. It's the same thing as Elohim versus Elohim. It's the same thing as Yud He Vav He or Yud Ke Vav Ke. But in the 1500s, the way the Ari would write Yud He Vav He, he would write it Yud Dalet Vav Dalet. And I think I've mentioned this once before. My personal opinion is it shows the influence of the Satan, because you write or pronounce Yud K Bob K, and the K being the Kaf, not the Kaf,
Kuf.
Yeah, the Kuf. Mm-hmm. The Kuf is the double agent. The Kuf is a letter that feeds the negative system because it goes below the line. It's the only letter that does. So the more times people say Yud K Bob K, they're feeding the energy to the negative system. And that's the way I understand it, my own personal opinion. I never heard this from a teacher, but that's the way I understand, because in the 1500s, the sages were writing Yud Dalet Vav Dalet, which is understandable because they didn't want to write Yud He Vav He or say Yud He Vav He. They'd say Yud Dalet Vav Dalet. But all of a sudden, in the 1800s, the writings are Yud Ke Vav Ke, which to me is an influence of the Satan infiltrating the people's actions, thereby giving him additional energy. But that's my personal opinion. You can agree with it, disagree with it, or, you know, go to somebody who's an expert in the letters and ask that question.
I think it's the only letter, too, that faces the Aleph. All the other letters are facing in the opposite direction, but the Kuf is going the opposite way. So I kind of felt like that went along with what you said.
Well, I don't see the Kuf going. I see the Kuf going in the same way the bet is. It's open on the left. The bet is open on the left. I don't understand the facing of the Aleph.
Well, I can't show it to you, so.
Understand.
I just made the comment to notice, you know, I had the Aleph bet wall chart above the chalkboard, and I made the comment that if they noticed that all the letters were facing toward the left, away from the Aleph representing Hashem, and one of the students said, oh, not the Kuf, or the Kaf, whichever way you want to pronounce it, and out of my mouth came Kabbalah. I said, well, that's because it's the double agent.
Right.
And then I admit, it took some time to explain about by double agent.
In the Asherit script, the Kuf is made with a Kaf and a Zion. So it's a combination of the two letters.
Mm-hmm.
But
it does mean monkey. So what I call it, you know, it's the monkey that cuts up anyway. So it kind of goes along with Satan's characteristic, I guess.
if there are no other questions, everyone should have a good evening. Tomorrow class at 4:30 West Coast time is a advanced reincarnation, and 7 o'clock is a Zohar class. Shalom to all.
Okay, shalom.
Thank you. Thank you, Mila. Thank you.